The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast joins you just a couple days after we joined you last time. Tom Hodricourt of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on the last podcast said he would shock him if the Brewers did not make at least one more big move. And 2 days later, the Brewers proved Tom to be a genius. That's exactly what happened, Tom. You were prescient.
Yes, and of course I knew it was going to be Yasmani Grandal, right?
Yes, of course you did. I mean, you didn't say that, but we all know that's what you were thinking. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. A reminder that you can find this podcast and all of those from the Journal Sentinel Sports Newsroom at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. We like ratings. We like reviews, mostly. We like you to subscribe. There's a Milwaukee Bucks podcast, Green Bay Packers, Wisconsin Badgers, and all of those are fairly regularly updated. Certainly the Bucks will come at you once a week, Badgers at a semi-regular basis, and then this Brewers podcast, which comes at you when there is news to discuss. This is an emergency podcast. And so we are with you in short order after just talking to you 2 days ago. The Brewers signing the catcher, who was formerly with the Los Angeles Dodgers, to a one-year, $18.25 million deal. A high price tag, but just a one-year deal, which to me is the most surprising part of this thing. And Tom, I'll let you have the floor just off the top, what your reaction is to the deal. I can't believe they were able to get the top, or at least arguably the top catcher on the free agent market on a one-year deal. That's surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been surprising to the Brewers, too, you know. We'll find out when he gets around to taking his physical and they can actually announce it and we can actually ask questions. Right now, they won't say anything until he has a physical, and I heard it might not be till next week, unfortunately. But, so he goes out on the market. He declines a $17.9 million qualifying offer from the Dodgers. You know, it's very standard practice to turn down these qualifying offers, although it's been a little dicey the last few years with the way the free agent market's been kind of eroding. So he goes out and reportedly turns down a four-year, $50 to $60 million deal with the Mets, supposedly because he didn't like the AAV, the annual salary. And so now I'm guessing after that the market did not materialize like he thought it would. So to the Brewers' credit, they saw an opening and jumped in with a one-year offer. You know, the one way to help a free agent save face from turning down a qualifying offer and then be stuck out there on the market is to offer him more than the qualifying offer, even if it's only $325,000 like this was. But at least he can say, you know, I didn't fall behind the qualifying offer. And now he gets to go back out on the market next winter and try again. So this is a genius move on many levels for the Brewers. The salary high? Yeah, it's high, but it's 1 year. So if he doesn't have a good year, it's not like you've tied yourself up for years to come. He has a tremendous incentive to play well because he wants to go back out on the market next year and make up for the money he didn't get this year. And it's the one area that they wanted the most improvement in outside of second base. And, left-handed pop is what intrigues the Brewers about him. And left-handed pop has been very, very good to the Brewers. Look at Travis Shaw. Look at Christian Yelich. Look at Eric Thames. Even that was a factor in going after Mike Moustakas late in the season. They think left-handed pop really plays well in Miller Park because it does. And Yasmani Grandal is a switch hitter, but he's way better from the left side, so that's what it's all about. And you know what? People said, JR, let's see what Christian Yelich does if he gets away from the cavernous Marlins Park and comes to Milwaukee where the ball flies. Well, look what happened. Well, Grandal's kind of leaving a similar situation in big Dodger Stadium and also the NL West that is full of pitchers' ballparks. So he's now going to get to play in Great American Ballpark. He was originally drafted by the Reds, so he's probably been looking forward to that. And Wrigley Field on days when the wind blows out, and Miller Park, and just, you know, it's way better to be a left-handed hitter in PNC Park than a right-handed hitter, which is so big out to left field there. So They think he's primed for a just his best power year, and let's see if that's what happens.
He's 30 years old, so maybe a little bit north of his prime, but still still obviously young enough. And as a catcher, his offensive profile, very good. He hit a walk-off home run against the Brewers in August when the two teams met in L.A. in a pretty spirited series. Had a very good playoff feel. And then, of course, they met again in the NLCS. And I think, obviously, one of the first reactions a lot of fans are going to have when they hear that the Brewers signed Grandal is thinking about that NLCS when he struggled mightily both offensively and defensively. But I do think the majority of fans realize that's not who he is. He is a very good player on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I wonder if he was worn down. I didn't realize till I looked it up after the Brewers, after the report surfaced Wednesday night that he had signed with the Brewers. I didn't realize he played in 140 games and he started 135. That's a lot for a catcher. I did not realize that. I can't see the Brewers asking him to play that many games behind the plate when they have Manny Pena and or Eric Kratz to team with him. I just can't see him playing that many games. And so hopefully he won't wear it down. You know, he's a little bit of a mixed bag defensively because he grades out so well in framing pitches, throwing out runners, and calling games that he has an overall positive defensive profile despite being terrible at blocking pitches in the dirt. You know, his pass balls have been a big boogaboo for him. They were against the Brewers last year in the NLCS, too. Maybe the Brewers can teach him a new way to block balls. You know, that's his own. You know, I compared it earlier today on a radio interview to coming home with four A's and a D. That was still a good semester, you know.
Yeah.
You just had the one area that you didn't do. Kind of like my organic chemistry grades when I was in pre-med at UVA.
Yeah.
Which is why I became a sports writer. So let's see, but he has like a plus 47 defensive run saves over the last 4 years. Considering all of his pass balls, that's pretty daggone good.
And there is a little bit of give and take. It seems like catchers who struggle with blocking the ball, if they're sometimes it is because they are such good pitch framers. They're working to, you know, get that extra strike, and sometimes it means not being in position to get down and get those pitches that fall into the dirt. And the Brewers staff, at least last year, worked with guys. I mean, look at how important it was to have good framing receivers when you got a guy like Wade Miley or Zach Davies, even Ulys Chacin. You had guys who worked the perimeter of the zone, and it was important to have guys who could receive the ball. So, like, if the rotation is made up the same way, we have no idea really what that will look like. This feels like a perfect fit. It feels like this is exactly the type of guy they would want back there.
Exactly. And, you know, another factor in this, with a one-year deal, it gives them one more year to develop their top catching prospect, Jacob Nottingham, who we saw briefly in the majors last year. He probably needs another year in AAA. He had some injuries that curtailed his action last year. And so what better thing than to have him hang with Yasmani Grandal during spring training and learn some of the finer points of pitch framing and calling games, and then going and playing in AAA, and let's see if he's ready to be their catcher next year.
Yeah, so let's talk more about Nottingham and the other guys that they have. Both Manny Pena and Eric Kratz are under contract and are, you know, pretty solid contributors as veterans. I mean, Eric Kratz had sort of a little bit of a magical run there to endear himself to Brewers fans in the latter stages of the season. Manny Pena had a great 2017, a little down last year, but has shown, you know, great ability again as both an offensive and defensive player, cannon of a throwing arm. Are they all going to be part of the Brewers organization? It's probably way too early to tell. Like you said, Jacob Nottingham gets a little extra seasoning maybe here, but what do we make of the situation with Pena and Kratz?
Yeah, I think, you know, we'll see what happens in camp if they're both still on the team and one doesn't get moved. Got to have catchers in AAA too. We noted that you know, Jacob Nottingham's also in the picture. So you'd have to think Pena's, you know, in a little higher in the pecking order than Kratz. You know, Kratz had always been mostly a minor league catcher with just a few tastes of the big leagues throughout his career. And then all of a sudden he got his Forrest Gump moment last year when he showed up in the right place at the right time and played well too. I mean, he earned his playing time. So he's probably not real thrilled to hear this Yasmani Grandal news. But let's see what happens. Catching's a dangerous position. You need some depth there. And now the Brewers have some depth.
Where does Grandal even bat in the lineup to you? Do you see him as like a 5-6 hitter? I mean, could he dip even lower? I mean, this lineup suddenly starts to look pretty scary overall.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. That's a good question. You know, they really like Kane 1 and Yelich 2. So does Braun stay in the 3 spot? They like to go righty, lefty. Then you could have, you know, he might be the number 6 hitter. You might see something like Kane, Yelich, Braun, Shaw, Aguilar, and then Grandal. And that would also be lefty-righty if it's a right-handed pitcher. Grandal is a switch hitter, but he would bat left in that circumstance. But isn't that a nice problem to have?
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, last year when they got Moustakas and they had still Shaw playing, look at some of the lineups of some of the guys they had batting 6 and 7. So, you know, depth and versatility are the two buzzwords for this regime. And they're going to get, you know, and Grandal can play some first base too. And you do and Aguilar is a right-hand hitter. You do wonder if this is going to portend the trade of Eric Thames, which would cut $6 million off their payroll and help absorb the $18 million salary of Grandal.
Yeah, Thames still a relative bargain, but this team did say that they were a little stretched financially as it was. And, you know, anytime a team says that, you never really know how serious they are about that. But then certainly signing somebody and committing $18 million for 1 year is going to stretch you, whether or not you were playing coy with your finances or not before.
And you become less of a bargain if you're not playing.
For sure, no doubt. And Eric Thames is going to be tough to see where those at-bats, where that playing time is coming from. I would be so curious to know, honestly, how this evolved from the Brewers' perspective. I mean, because we know they met with Wilson Ramos around the time of the winter meeting, so right. It's not as if they were closed off to the idea of signing a free agent catcher, but I can't imagine they were anywhere, you know, approaching the four-year, $60 million reported contract that the Mets were initially discussing. And I have to think at some point they said, wow, this could actually, a one-year deal could actually work here. And right. Then they dove right in at that point.
It makes you wonder why the Dodgers didn't jump back in and do it and try to keep him, right? I don't think they're that great at catchers, you know, with him gone.
Yeah, so, Austin Barnes is like the leader in the clubhouse, right?
Right. I saw one report that said they had talked on and on, off and on with the Grandal and his agent during this offseason. But you got to believe once that Mets thing fell apart and the market did not you know, do what he wanted to, if that's when the thought of coming in with a one-year offer. It'll be interesting to find out when we are able to ask questions who broached the subject first, Grandal or the Brewers.
Eerily similar to last year, where you saw players signing later in the offseason than we had in years past. Mike Moustakas, a perfect example, guy who ends up taking a one-year deal for, I don't know, less money in terms of annual value, but just the idea that we thought these guys were going to get multi-year deals, and maybe now this is the front end of seeing the same thing this offseason. Some buzz even over around the Grandal signing about this threatening even the labor situation in baseball, that players are getting fed up with whatever they perceive. I don't know if they perceive it as collusion, but teams being so patient that you're not seeing multi-year deals getting thrown around. What is your take on that? Do you see down the road this could be complicated? Not this deal specifically, but deals like this, that players aren't getting the amount of money that they used to?
Well, I know the union's upset about it. I know there's been a lot of talk about it. I mean, let's face it. Does anybody deny that the market has not been way different the last couple of years, you know? And, you know, maybe it was time for a market correction, and maybe players had gotten used to breaking the bank, you know, whenever they wanted to. You know, we do have mostly Ivy League guys running the teams now, so are they just smarter and finally figured out to stop, you know, spending way money than players are worth? I don't know. The market's unquestionably changed. And we still got a few years before the next CBA comes around, but you can bet the union is taking notes.
I'm going to peel back a little behind the curtain of this podcast. I heard you typing ever so slightly before and see that you were responding to a kind of a developing story, I guess, that the Brewers, earlier today we'd heard they were interested in some middle infielders, second base, third base possibly. Jeff Passan of ESPN and others were reporting that they were stepping up their pursuits in that department. We talked about that a couple days ago, the kind of conundrum with the younger players they have that can eventually fill those spots. Josh Harrison now is a name, sort of as we record this, that's been popping up. Jed Lowry was certainly a name that's been connected to the Brewers. He signed a two-year deal earlier today, elsewhere. So it's the Brewers, that's one off their board. Interesting developments. I mean, I guess it's still anything could happen. They can afford to be patient now that they've got Grandal in the bag. But do you think this could happen pretty quickly, that the Brewers could have another free agent acquisition, you know, within the next few days?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me, because we know they've been looking at the second base market. There's been lots of guys out there, but one by one, they're going off the board. Today, two of them went off the board. Brian Dozier signed with the Nationals, and Jed Lowry signed with the Mets. So a couple of them came off the board. The latest rumor I saw from John Parato out of Pittsburgh is that the Brewers might have interest in Josh Harrison. That makes a lot of sense to me, because, for one thing, they know him really well from having played against them so much with NL Central. But the other thing is, if they can't get a player on a one-year deal, and you know, we've talked about, you know, the advent of Keston Hira in the major leagues, and how the Brewers don't want to tie themselves up long term with another second baseman. But if they do have to give a second year, or at least some kind of vesting thing or option, or account for a second year in some way, they'd like that guy to play another position, because then if Hira shows up, they can use that guy elsewhere, let him fill in here, there. I think Harrison's played a lot of third. I think he can play first and the outfield.
Right.
He's a very talented guy. So if you're going to commit beyond 1 year, or possible commitment beyond 1 year, you'd probably like him to play somewhere else. Because the one thing we know about Hira is he's second base only. He is not a multi-position guy. And so when he's ready to play, second base is going to be his position.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. It's a conundrum they face, because we just don't know when Keston Hira is going to be ready. Maybe not at all in 2019. Certainly seems like at some point, but you know it's not going to be right away in 2019. So
right, but they do, and they do have additional coverage in Mauricio Dubon.
For sure, yeah, they do.
Who would have played a lot for them last year if he didn't tear his ACL a month into the season at Colorado Springs. All he had was a 23-game hitting streak at the time. They had barely played 23 games. He might have been the first player to have a longer hitting streak than games played, because they weren't that far into the season to have a 23-game hitting streak. So, and he's a true middle infielder. He's a very good shortstop. So at some point, Mauricio Dubon is going to be the backup at both short and second, if not more than that.
One last thought on Grandal. This is something I heard actually inside the Journal Sentinel offices even, but also outside from some social media reaction. Some people have a hard time still with batting average numbers, and Grandal is a career 240 hitter. He was 241 last year, and even though I think we can all acknowledge he was very good, again, offensively and defensively, that is still a number that sticks out. Maybe can you kind of explain why batting average maybe isn't the you know, the central focal point that it's been in years past, and or maybe at least how the Brewers look at that, and when they do they even look at batting average at all? Is that even something we should even consider when evaluating talent?
Well, here's a tip for you. And when they do their lineups on the scoreboard at Miller Park, they now use OPS instead of batting average. So I think that's a pretty big tip that the Brewers consider batting average secondary. You know, it's on-base percentage and slugging, which is OPS. That's combined. You know, they want you either hitting a home run or getting on base. And so batting average isn't nearly as important as it is having some pop and having a good OP. You know, he's had a good OBP. I think he was like, you know,
yeah, 340.
Close to 350 last year. So batting average doesn't mean squat anymore. Does anybody remember Travis Shaw only batted like 240 last year?
It's true. Maybe even south of that. He's due for he hit into a lot of bad luck last year. I think Travis Shaw is going to be, whether he's the second baseman or the third baseman, I think he's due for a huge year in 2019.
He's a very valuable player, and he's about to get a huge pay raise in arbitration.
Yeah, let's talk about that real quickly. Arbitration cases could begin. The deadline to sign players before things got dicey and people started exchanging figures for the hearings was in fact Thursday night. Any of those arbitration cases pique your interest? I mean, certainly we'll hear the numbers here in the next few days, but anything really stick out to you?
Actually, we have, I think, until noon Friday before have to exchange figures. I think that's true. Or else we would have seen a lot more signings on Thursday. So the Brewers are down to six players. Let me see if I can recite them. Travis Shaw is one. We just talked about him. I know Zach Davies and Junior Guerra. We have the new lefty, Alex Claudio. We have Manny Pena, and we have Corey Knebel. I believe I've hit them all. So, you know, they said they had 13 at the outset of the offseason. So to be down to six is pretty good. So those who have not settled by that noon deadline Friday, and you're going to see all kinds of settlements just across baseball. I don't know how many of the Brewers. You are allowed to continue negotiating beyond that exchange of figures date. But most teams have now gone to what we call file and trial. If you don't sign before you file, they just go ahead and go to the hearing. That sometimes can be contentious, and teams are counting on players not wanting to go to those hearings because, you know, you get one salary or the other. So it is a crapshoot. You bet on red or black, to use a roulette term, and the panel's got to pick one or the other. So we'll see. Before that deadline, we'll see a pop. You know, I'm going to say four of the six guys signed by then. Shaw might be tough because he was a minimum salary guy last year, and now he's in the first year of arbitration. He has a tremendous portfolio to bring to a hearing. I saw one projection of him maybe going up all the way up to like $5 million. How many jobs can you work where you go you get a tenfold increase in salary?
Yeah, well, it used to be that there was even greater increases after that, and the way the market is set up now, and it's get your money now while you can, because once you turn 30, teams aren't paying what they used to.
Yeah, a lot of guys aren't making it to that third year of arbitration, you know. So get what you can your first year of arbitration.
For sure. Tom Haudricourt, by the way, with a roulette reference, he said during the winter meetings he would not gamble in Las Vegas, but I don't know. That implies that you've got a little more knowledge than you let on at the time.
Well, I held off until the last day, and I wish I would have held off longer.
That's awesome. One guy who's not going to arbitration is Jimmy Nelson. He settled a long time ago, and now we're hearing that he feels he's going to be completely ready to get going right at the outset of spring training. And it's funny because as much as Brewer fans were counting on him in 2018, he's almost off the radar in 2019 because the Brewers were able to come up with some pretty impressive projectable starters by the end of the year in Freddie Peralta, Corbin Burns, and Brandon Woodruff. But, I mean, imagine Jimmy Nelson coming back. I'm sure they'll be cautious. I'm sure we shouldn't expect Jimmy Nelson to be 2017 Jimmy Nelson out of the gate, but it does have to be encouraging to know that he's going to be, or at least in his mind, not restricted as we get going in spring training.
Yeah, he's a true wild card for 2019 because nobody knows what to expect. You know, he missed the whole season. He had a very severe shoulder injury. Pretty much the shoulder was totally rebuilt. Took him the whole year to rehab. But the good news is, by the end of the year, he was done with his rehab and has now had the regular winter as you would going into a spring training. He's probably going to start if he hasn't already started his throwing. They usually, most pitchers start doing some throwing in January and then start ramping it up. So let's see what he's got, you know. And you know the Brewers will be careful with him. They're not going to sit there and he's not going to pitch six innings in the spring training opener, you know. So they'll be careful with him. I'm guessing he's going to have to go to the minors, JR, and log some innings just for his own good and safety, you know. You don't want to, like, throw him into the major leagues right away. I can't imagine how good he would have to look in camp to make the team right there. But who knows? And let's say he at least approaches – the pitcher he was before he got hurt. It's going to be like trading for a top of the rotation guy. You know what? He was pitching the best he had ever pitched when he got hurt in September 2017. So if he's able to come back, even if it's in the second half of the season, boy, that would be a big boost for the team.
I will close by asking the same exact question I asked just a few days ago. Do you expect the Brewers to have one more big move before the start of the season?
Yeah, I think they'll get a second baseman, you know. And I think it'll be somebody we know, whether it's Josh Harrison or, you know, I think it'll be somebody we've heard of. It's not going to be like, I don't think it'll be a Yasmani Grandal. I'm not looking for that Bumgarner thing to happen. I'm not even sure the Giants will trade Bumgarner. I could be totally wrong, but I would think it'd be way more likely for the Brewers to trade for Madison Bumgarner on July 28th than it is on January 28th. And so let's just see how that goes. I'm not sure they're ready to give up a bunch of prospects at this point, but they might be willing to with 2 months to go like they did last year. Look at all the guys they picked up last year for the last 2 months, and it helped push them over the top. And Mark Attanasio's modus operandi has been to save some money in his piggy bank for July and August.
Biggest piggy bank in the state of Wisconsin. He is Tom Haudricourt, beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering the Milwaukee Brewers. Thanks for joining us, Tom. I assume we'll talk to you again sometime in the, I don't know, medium distant future, but who knows? There's always a chance we'll do one of these emergency podcasts again soon.
That's the beauty of the off season. You never know what each day is going to bring. So we'll see what we got tomorrow, right?
Yep, it is true. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
Thanks, JR.